I'm Joe Heim, the moderator for this debate tonight between candidates for the Wisconsin Assembly District 96. This is the Vernon County, Crawford County, and parts of Monroe. The two candidates, incumbent Lee Nearson from Westby on my right, and challenger Alicia Leinberger from Viroqua, neighbors practically, yeah?
Yeah.
On my left. The debate is sponsored by following groups, La Crosse Tribune, WXOW News 19, WKBT News 8, WLSU, Wisconsin Public Radio, League of Women Voters, and the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. On campus, we are sponsored by the Joint Legislative Relations Committee, the Political Science Department, Faculty Senate, the Student Association, the Academic Staff Council, and the University Staff Council. So that covers most of the employees. The journalists for the debate tonight are as follows: Martha Kolaski from WKBT, Dustin Lukey from WXOW, La Crosse Tribune, Jordan Vian, WLSU, Hope Kiron, League of Women Voters, Catherine Kolkmeyer, and I think that's it. Okay, that's pretty good. Great format, just to cover so everybody knows the ballgame rules. Opening statements are about 2 minutes in length. Then questions and answers from the panel. The questions and answers would be about 1 minute, 30 seconds. Candidates that can respond, by the way, it's all you gotta just give them a little nudge or something, and they can respond to the other person. The closing statements then of about 1 minute, and that should probably do it. And again, we have timekeeper Mary Nugent from the League of Women Voters. Thanks, Mary. So, please turn off your phones if you have them on already, and refrain from applause, and please welcome our two candidates.
Thank you.
Okay, the opening statement, Lee Nearson will go first.
Thank you, Joe. First off, I'd like to thank everyone who helped put this candidate forum together. I look forward to having a positive debate on the issues that you can make an informed decision on who will represent you. Most importantly, thank you to my constituents who have trusted me to represent them, and to my family for their support. It means a lot to me. As you know, I seek this office on the Republican ballot. I believe in the Republican Party views of fiscal responsibility, family values, reform, personal freedom, and protection of our constitutional rights. But at times I voted against the party and when it's the best thing to do for the 96th district. I have authored legislation along with Democrats, like the Wisconsin Disaster Relief Fund and an agritourism law that's a model for our nation, because it was the right thing to do. Party affiliation didn't matter. What mattered was helping our constituents. Tonight, I'm sure we'll talk about many challenges we face in our state and how my opponent and I differ in our approach. I welcome this opportunity to discuss how we can work together to make Wisconsin an even better place to work, raise a family, and retire. Since I first ran for this office, I've said there's our core functions of government that we must provide for: education, infrastructure, public safety, and helping those who can't provide for themselves. But I haven't forgotten this must be done within the taxpayers' ability to pay. Folks simply can't pay for everything on the government's wish list. As an incumbent, I run on my record of accomplishments. I've served in the majority, in the minority, in split houses, under the same party control, and under both Democrat and Republican governors. I also hope to talk to you about something that I hold very dear, and that's agriculture. I farmed and milked cows for over 40 years. I went 10 years without missing a milking, and that's why it's been an honor and a privilege to serve as the Assembly Committee Chair of Agriculture. I said I look forward to a good discussion of many important issues facing the 96th District in our state tonight. I'm guessing this will be a lot more civil than what we've seen at the presidential debates. I'm honored to have your past support. I'd be honored to have your support again on November 8th.
Alicia Leinberger.
Thank you. And thank you also to all of the organizers of this event. It's fantastic to get an opportunity to talk together and so that voters can compare how we will represent them in the assembly. I come from a background of public education myself. My mom is here. You might recognize her. She's the one with the Alicia for Assembly shirt over there. And my father, both were public school teachers and for about 30 years. And unwittingly, I grew up with that ethic of service and a commitment to lifelong learning and a commitment to children and to what's best for all children to excel and have equal opportunity in the world. And I think that's a big part of the reason why I'm running right now. We'll get to that throughout the discussion, I'm sure. After that, I went to the UW-Madison, and I was there for quite a number of years, a little bit more than four. And I started out in art and ended up in conservation biology and science. So that's probably why it took a little longer than normal to find myself. I left that wonderful school when I was just looking, and my tuition at the time was about $2,400 compared to about $10,400 for in-state today. And that's also a big problem that we're facing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. After that, I went to dedicate myself to service in the Peace Corps, and I worked in agriculture and with small family farmers there. I continued that back in the States, working with dairy farmers in Plain, Wisconsin, to help them get a better price for their milk with family farm defenders. I worked on fair trade for a while, helping farmers get better prices through a different way of doing markets. And then in the early 2000s, I ended up working in renewable energy, where I've been for about 15 years, promoting clean energy in the state and helping people control their costs of energy. And that has given me the background that I need, both through small business and policy, to understand the way that we shape economies for small rural communities.
Okay, thank you. First question comes from Martha Kolaski, WKBT, goes to Lee Narrison.
Mr. Narrison, yes. Can you tell us, do you believe that the frac sand mining industry should have a place in Wisconsin? Why or why not?
I believe there is a way to get it done right. We need to have the science and have the technology that we can do it the right way. There's a few companies that are here now that are building, and the frac sand is coming out, and it's there. It's creating a lot of jobs and giving good jobs to people, and it's also helping the nation for our efficiency in fuel.
Thank you so much for that question. It is one of my favorite topics, actually, energy. I don't think that frac sand mining or fracking has any place in our energy economy. I think that it's overall, the costs of it are far, far greater than what we're paying either at natural gas prices or even the price that we're paying to the financial prices that we're paying, the money that we're paying. The costs are really to our children and the future, especially frac sand mining in our state. Something that's very interesting to me that I've recently learned is the same frac sand that we're mining and shipping out of our state is the basis for our aquifers. So that means we're not only mining our aquifers and sending all of that wonderful sand out of the state for nothing. We're not really getting any benefit from that. The jobs are very short term. But in addition, we're reducing our ability to hold that water in the ground for future use. And there's a good chance that that's contributing to the massive amounts of flooding, especially in the 96th district where we live, because you don't have the saturation of the water anymore in a natural way. Instead, you're seeing it run down in massive amounts, and the kind of flooding that we just saw a couple of weeks ago and the destruction and the cost to those communities is far too high by my measure. So I would say, no, I think we should end it immediately. And I don't think that the sacrifice in jobs couldn't be made up in a better industry, especially in renewable industry, as we're seeing in our neighbors, Minnesota and Iowa and Illinois.
Okay, next question.
Could I?
Oh, go ahead.
And one other thing on the frac sand. We've had frac sand mines in Wisconsin for years because that's the same sand we use for glass, to make glass. So frac sand mines have always been here. Now I know they're getting more of them, but and in the 96th we have, I can only think of one frac sand mine down in Prairie du Chien area. So trying to tie that to the flooding, I'm having a little.
It's the watershed, Lee.
It's what you've got a lot of watersheds, right. in Wisconsin. I've worked on a lot of these watersheds, and it's. There are other issues that we have besides the frac sand for the rain and that we've had, because you remember 18 inches in August, so everything was saturated. So
that's right.
Any drop of rain that came would run after that. So
right.
Okay. Next question comes from Dustin Lucas, WXOW.
With healthcare costs rising, What do you see as the state's role in keeping access to healthcare both affordable and, I guess, accessible in more rural areas?
Well, I do agree with taking the federal money, and I think that that was a major mistake. The result of not taking the federal money added $3.2 billion to our state budget. $3.2 billion, and we only were able to insure 20,000 more people for that. Had we taken the federal money, we actually would have saved the state $400 million. I'm just talking about the public part of the state health care, and we could have insured 63,000 more people and saved our state $400 million. I just think that that's fiscally irresponsible. So the first thing that I would like to do is see us take that money and put it towards our communities in rural areas. Secondly, I'd like to see us expand some of the programs that we already have in our rural areas. We have some amazing community health centers. The Scenic Bluff Center in Cashton serves a lot of low-income folks and folks that don't have access otherwise. Those are models that can be expanded into other rural communities. And lastly, we need to address poverty, because at the basis of healthcare problems is poverty. And when we have a legislature and Mr. Nierson who voted against raising the minimum wage, we can expect people to have a lot more problems with their health, both in paying for their healthcare and taking care of their families in the first place. So we need to address poverty as a root of healthcare problems.
First off, if you think back a couple years ago, Wisconsin had the best, most, one of the most people that have been covered with health care, with our Badger Care Plus, our senior care, and then when the Affordable Care Act came in, and then you started to see them go off. We had more covered before that, so I think it would have been better holding off on the state. You look at accepting it, look at Minnesota. You just look at the governor from Minnesota. He was just on the news the other day, saying that we can't afford this, and he took all the money and he was all gung-ho on it when it started, and now he's talking the other way that we can't afford it because the premiums are going double. And saying I voted against the minimum wage, we never voted on that bill. If she takes the time to look and see where that vote is, it comes on a pulling motion. That the minority party, who's ever in the minority, they do it. They, at the end, in a session, you're getting near the end of the day, they do a pulling motion to pull a bill off of a committee that's never had a hearing on it, maybe, and then they do a vote on it. It's a gotcha vote, and they all do it. We're voting on not talking about it at that exact time that they want to bring it up, because we want open government. They should know when we're going to talk about these bills and not bring them up right at that time.
Next question comes from La Crosse Tribune, Jordan Bayan.
A recent audit criticized the Department of Natural Resources for not keeping a closer eye on suspected polluters. Is this something that concerns you? Do you think the DNR does enough to monitor concentrated animal feeding operations?
When you're looking at the DNR and writing citations, they don't want to write citations. They want the problem fixed. So a lot of times they come in, they see the problem, and if the person or company or whoever it is has that issue with it, they'll work with them, get it fixed right away, because they don't have the authority to write tickets and fine them. They have to do all the investigating, then it goes over to the Attorney General's office. They determine if they're going to take it to court or not. That's where the fines come in. So a DNR would like to get it solved, and who knows, you know, some of the issues, we don't know how big they are. Some of them are big, some of them aren't so big. But as long as people are willing and the companies are willing to work with DNR, they want it solved as fast as they can instead of taking 2, 3, maybe 4 years before it goes through the court system.
Often those problems haven't been solved at all, so whatever Lee's talking about doesn't seem to be working very well. And then when you couple that with the fact that they've pretty much eviscerated the DNR's ability to monitor by removing 18 scientists and 12 educators last year, it kind of gives you an indication that maybe they don't want them looking at it at all. And at the same time, you see legislation being passed, specifically legislation that caters to confined animal feeding operations, such as the high-capacity well bill that Lee was a sponsor of this past session. It looks to me like they are giving the thumbs up to confined animal feeding operations and other industrial agriculture to come in and take the groundwater out of our state and pollute as much as they want to without very much oversight at all, and certainly no penalties for that oversight. If you remove the ability of the DNR to monitor what's going on, and then in addition you remove their ability to actually apply fines and other sorts of penalties to violations, then you're going to have a proliferation of all sorts of pollutants, not just confined animal feeding operations, but also pollutants that come from frac sand mines, pollutants that come off of large industrial agriculture like potato farms that use an immense amount of pesticides, and the manure spills that we're seeing in Kewaunee County right now that is infiltrating, and the nitrates that are also, my gosh, I could go on about this, but are infiltrating into the groundwater system and affecting people's lives on a daily basis.
If I could, Joe.
Go ahead.
Since she brought up my high cap oil bill, I wish people would read the bill and see what's in it, because we are not touching any of the regulations and rules on it. DNR's policy right now has been on repair, replace, and transfer, that's not going to trigger a review. And we haven't changed anything that triggers a review, so that was going to go into law. And then in the bill, there was also going to be a 3-year study by the DNR up in the Central Sands. It was going to take a year for them to decide how they wanted to study it, and then it was going to be a 3-year study so we get the science to figure out what's causing the water and where it's going and what's the issues with it, and having the science behind it. And if they didn't have the people there to do it, we're going to make sure that the DNR had them so they could get the study done. And then you also have to remember that the high cap wells also are the same rules and regulations that go for the city and towns. They're under the same rules and regs as the agriculture or the industrial high cap well. So you can say you want to trigger a review all the time on it, but if a city well would happen to break down and it would take them 2 days to fix it, but they have to do a review that would be 3 months, 2 months, I'm sure the people living in the town would not like not having water for that long.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know how often that's a problem, Lee. Honestly, when you look at the folks, I did read the bill, by the way, and secondly, when you look at the folks that came to the public hearing that supported the bill compared to the folks that came and registered against the bill, you will see it, the supporters stacked high with industrial agriculture. Potato farmers, CAFO farms, frac sand miners, realtor associations, that's who it's, and when you see the other side, the folks that took time out of their day to go and be against the bill, they are all public citizens. They are environmental groups. They are groundwater protectors. They are people that are scared that they're going to lose their access to clean, safe, abundant water, Lee. How can you look at those people in the eye and tell them that that's the extent of the bill? Secondly, it's very common for the Republicans to say, oh, there's a problem. Well, we need to study it for a while, for 3 years. In the meantime, how much is our people's groundwater affected by that time? Sorry.
You want to respond?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Where do I start?
We can go on
this. We can go on high cap wells the rest of the night. So
next question goes to Lisa Leinberger from Hope Care One.
With the severe amount of flooding that has impacted your district, public infrastructure is obviously an important issue. How do we improve our state's road system, and what changes, if any, need to take place on a state level to make those improvements possible?
Am I me first? Okay. Well, obviously, we need a gas tax, and we needed it about 3 years ago when the price of gas went so low that it would have been pretty easy for people to absorb it. That would have been a good time instead of borrowing millions and millions of dollars and paying, billions of dollars, I'm sorry, and paying millions in interest payments that, honestly, my children are going to be paying when they're my age. Well, maybe not my age, but their age, anyway. So I think that was incredibly irresponsible, and just so that the governor can stand up there and say no new taxes, which is kind of interesting because, of course, there's no taxes on the front end, but the costs are real. The costs of not doing anything about the roads are real. The cost to the wear and tear on the vehicles, the cost in lost business to rural businesses, that's real. The fact that the townships, and I was at the transportation meeting along with Lee, were saying that they have so little money, they're turning some of their roads back into gravel. So what I would like to see is a gas tax imposed immediately, because I believe that that does two things. One is it taxes people that are driving through our state, not just the residents of our state, so everyone who uses the roads. And secondly, it encourages people to think about how much gas they're using and perhaps find some vehicles that use a little less gas, and that saves our air quality in the end. And I just want to say a quick number here, because if you're a farmer and you're driving a truck about 10,000 miles a year and it's an 8 mile per gallon truck, you're going to pay about $50 extra per year, and I don't know a farmer that wouldn't want to pay that.
Okay. Well, this is where I disagree with my party, because we do have to get these roads fixed, and that's why in the last budget I voted against it, because I wanted to put the gas tax back. And that's only a small part. We need more. That's only a little bit of where it is, because we have to get a revenue source, because we can't keep borrowing. That's just kicking the can down the road. So we have to get a revenue source, but it needs to be more than just a gas tax. Now, some people are saying that's a tax. It should be voted on every year if you're going to raise a tax instead of doing it at an automatic increase. That we can have that discussion when we go to discuss the budget, because that's going to be one of the biggest issues in the budget this year is that. When it comes to the roads, you talked about the flooding. Back in 2005, when the tornado went through Wyola and down in Stoughton, FEMA didn't cover any money. We didn't have enough damage for FEMA. They actually told me in Wyola that we cleaned up too fast. So we didn't get any money there. So I worked with Senator Miller from Madison area, and we got a bill passed for the Wisconsin fund. So if it doesn't qualify for FEMA, there's money there from the state that will help for the towns. It's for the infrastructure to try to get it fixed up again. So that's one thing I've done to help, to try to get money to get it fixed after the flooding. There's a lot of issues on the flooding with the rain and a lot of other issues that we need to deal with, but the roads have to be fixed. Just borrowing money, it's 25% of the budget, you know, DOT budget goes for paying back debt. That's a lot of road repairs when you're looking at that size of a budget.
Okay, thank you. Next question goes to Lee Nerson, comes from Catherine Kochmeyer.
Thank you. I'm gonna switch to education. The League supports school choice within the K-12 public school system, in which tax dollars do not go to private schools and in which schools receiving public funds meet the same accountability requirements as public schools. What legislative actions would you support to ensure the accountability and use of public dollars?
If it's public dollars, I think they should be under the same testing, the same scrutiny, as long as it's public dollars that are going to it. And I don't know how more to stretch that out. I believe in the public school. I went to public school. My kids and daughters went to public school. My grandkids now are starting on public school. And I believe in the public school, and I think our schools in our district can take any challenge from any other school around, because they are some of the best. And we have to keep them that way. And that's why we try to get more funding for lower enrollment, and then transportation on bus transportation is another issue to get money into.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I would like to end the voucher program altogether, and I don't think that any of our public money should go to private companies at all, ever, for any reason. Public school is there to equalize opportunity for all children, and they're creeping in. They started slow back in Tommy Thompson's day, and actually at that time it was okay. It was very limited, but this year they've really gone over the edge, and I will just encourage folks to look at Lee Narrison's voting record, because when you look at it, the way he talks here is not how he voted. He says he voted against the budget, but if you look at the amendments, he voted every single time to cut public school funding in four voucher schools, to expand those voucher schools. And that is mainly the reason why I'm running, because I feel like we're not actually being represented. Lee can talk and say what he wants to out loud, but if you take a look at his record, which is on my website, you can see it for yourself. Frankly, am I done? Frankly, I think there's a lot that can be done with public schools the way they are. Tommy Thompson made a commitment to fund our public schools with state funds to 2/3, and right now we're at about 45%. And I think that is criminal honestly. I just think that it's stealing from our children's future. And in the same time, you see a devaluation of teachers, and that absolutely breaks my heart.
Yeah, if I could, please. When you're looking at the vouchers and the schools, actually a little history lesson, it was Democrat Representative Polly Williams from Milwaukee that wanted to get that done for the Milwaukee School District to get them to have a better chance, because she said herself she was tired of seeing the MPS fail their students. So Polly was the one that wanted to get it going, and she didn't care who helped her do it, Democrat or Republican, because she wanted to help the students in Milwaukee. And on the public school and private school, you can say all you want all the time. You can say it as many times as you want, my opponent. It's not going to make it fact on what I do. I don't know how else to say it. Because if you start looking at what I've done over the years, or my record down there, I think a lot of people here that are from the press know that I'm not just straight down the line Republican voter.
I'm sorry. Read for yourself, Lee, and anyone who wants to. It's right here. Here's all of the amendments within the 15-16 budget. You only voted for one that wasn't along party line. You voted against the whole budget, but you could have stood with us on any one of these amendments. You could have stood on the floor and made a voice. And I've talked to a few of your colleagues, and they say they've never heard you made a speech on the floor about education. So you're not standing up for us. And secondly, outside of the budget, here's the rest of the voting record. It's on my website. You can see for yourself, folks. He votes 99% of the time right along party lines with Robin Voss.
If you, real quick, this will be real quick. 91% of the votes that were taken in this last budget were nonpartisan. That means 91% of the time all the Democrats voted with them too. And out of almost 600 bills that were passed, there were only 36 that were voted on that were party line. So you can take the numbers and turn them around all you want, but I think they know where I stand on it, and the people in the district know where I am.
Next question comes from the audience. Are there any issues you disagree with your party leadership on? Goes to Lisa Lineberger.
Let's see. Currently, I don't think the Democrats have been able to have a whole lot of voice. And I imagine that there are some issues that I would disagree with. But I will say, for the most part, I do agree with the majority of the ideas of the Democratic Party, in that government is here to serve us as communities, and that our taxpayer money needs to come back to our communities first and foremost. What I see over and over under this administration and the Republicans is that so much of our taxpayer money is going off to private companies. Things are being privatized at an alarming rate. Our public lands are being given, sold off to have state names. Our schools are being privatized. Our healthcare system now, since we didn't accept the federal money, is administered by a private company and costing us $3.2 billion extra. In fact, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is writing humongous tax credits, millions of dollars of refundable tax credits to private corporations, and yet the Republicans have voted not to create any accountability for that whatsoever. In fact, you can see in here amendments by the Democrats that are saying, hey, we need to have some accountability and show that there are jobs being created, and they voted against making that happen. So what I see is a grab for our public dollars, for our state tax dollars, to private companies. And personally, I think that the Democrats are trying very hard to stop that, and I would stand with them.
Anderson?
Two of the issues that come to mind first off that I really disagreed with on the party was the open records law that they tried to kind of sneak in on the 4th of July here 2 years ago, I believe it was. As soon as I heard that, I got on the phone right away and said, this is ridiculous. This has to stop. So there's a number of things that can be stopped before it gets out there for even a vote, and that was one of them that we did. And then the other one is an issue that we've been having is the railroad tracks access for the trespassing law on crossing railroad tracks. I actually had it on the governor's desk in the budget. I know I voted against the budget, but I had it in the budget, and he vetoed it out of the budget. So I did my job. I got it there, and I got it to his desk. And then I brought the bill up again at the end of the session and got it through the assembly, and for lack of a better term, it got derailed in the Senate.
Next question comes from Martha Kolaski, WKBT.
Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a much-debated trade deal that, if it passes, though, could be an absolute boon for Wisconsin dairy farmers. They would have a very large market to sell their products. Do you think this is a good deal, or do you think there are better ways to find markets for our dairy farmers?
I think there's probably good ways to do it to that, but I'm not quite sure on the total details on when you go to take in other shipping ours to other countries and then them coming back, if it's going to be the same tariff coming in and going out. So that would make a lot of difference. But just in Wisconsin on our trade, in 2 years it's gone up 18% on our exports without it. So Wisconsin is doing an excellent job on getting it out and getting it to other parts of the country and other parts of the nation.
The partnership, the trade deals work both ways. And unfortunately, what happens more often than not when we have a strong dollar is our markets are flooded with imports. And I've certainly spoken with farmers who say that they think that that's what the result would be. So what you have is a situation when maybe very, very, very large dairy farms, 4,000 head or more, might be able to aggregate their milk and trade on a market like that. But smaller family-sized dairy farms are not going to be able to play at all. And we're already losing far too many family dairy farms as it is with the milk prices and the unjust markets, to be honest. I think there's much better ways to handle it. And personally, I did work on a on some programs with fair trade market creativity back a few years, where we just differentiated the product. So we basically said this product comes from a small family farmer. It's a different product than from a CAFO farm, honestly. And consumers are willing to pay for it. As Wisconsin, I can't believe that we already haven't found a way where we have a certain amount of our milk marketing board that we can use within the state and DATCAP as well to create a program where we have certification and labeling for small dairy farms, let's say 400 head or less, and products that are traded through there and the milk that's traded through there is given a different price and differentiated in the market. That's what I would like to see.
Next question comes from Duskin Lukey from WXW.
Staying on the theme of agriculture and specifically dairy farms, the report came out that Wisconsin lost 400 dairy farms last year, but the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association says that's not bad compared to some other years. How do you encourage growth, specifically maybe people who haven't been farmers getting into the industry or keeping people in the industry?
Well, you have to have good, stable prices so that they have a way to plan. I'm a small business person. I understand. If I don't know what my costs of goods are going to be and the income that I can expect, it's very difficult for me to plan 2 years out and certainly 5 years out, as a dairy farmer needs to do. And so you have to have a way that you can guarantee to them a product. We have a couple of great examples within our district. One is Organic Valley, of course, where they have differentiated their market and they have an entirely different price, and the farmers know what they're going to get ahead of time, and so when they sign up for that program and that certification, they know where they're going to be. Another one is the Westby Co-op Creamery, and they actually have organic and conventional farmers. They would like to be able to have the same sort of market differentiation and security for their conventional farmers as they do for their organic farmers, and they have some creative ideas, and personally, if I'm elected in the assembly, I'll spend a lot of time helping them with that. I have a lot of ideas that we've tried before, some who have worked, and being a small business person working in markets, I think that I'm actually a great candidate to help them with that. And since we're speaking of business, not just small dairy farmers, but all sorts of other farmers, well, not just farmers, I guess other sorts of businesses, I was just speaking with someone in Genoa yesterday who's a small fisherman, and we were talking about how when his father was a fisherman, they actually had a fish market in every town, and we don't have that anymore. So these sorts of innovative, cooperative type markets that are the basis actually of our district need to be revived, and I think I'm the right person to do that.
Mr. Nierzen?
So on keeping people on the farm, 800 is too many. We need everybody farming that we can get. That includes, we've got a number of Amish in the district. We've got Organic Valley, one of the greatest spotlights that we can put on the district, because there the farmer knows their milk price for a year, and they can kind of detect where it is. But when you're looking at the overall milk price, we have to get rid of the Eau Claire milk market. That started in 1940. And that is, the farther away from Eau Claire you get, the more money you get for your milk, because they wanted people to start milking in other parts of the country because you didn't have the transportation there that we do now. So there's one we have to get rid of there. What I've been trying to work on, I've got my daughter here tonight. I had three girls. They didn't want the farm. I'm trying to figure out how can I find it and make it feasible for somebody that wants the farm, that could have come to my farm, started working there, and gotten the equity to get the money, because the money's there. You talk to the lenders, the money's there, but they don't have the equity to get the money. So it's to have them get the equity. Is there some way to make it feasible and make it economical to get them on the farm, but to also make it for the farmer that owns it, that since it's not one of his siblings or one of his own kids? So to have that to come in to keep people on the farm, because we need everybody farming, and all farms of all sizes have to be able to make a living, make a decent wage.
Next question goes to Lee Nierzen, comes from, Jordan Beyond.
So let's talk about the university system. Do you believe the state is providing adequate funding to the system? And do you support the continuing tuition freeze?
As you heard, my opponent said I voted against the budget because I got a free pass. Well, that wasn't it. It was the education and transportation. And one was an education all the way from K-12 to your technical colleges to the university system. And we have to figure out how to make it affordable and accessible for them to get their degree. If they want to go to 4 years or work at the technical college, if they want to go for a 2 year or 1 year and get out in the job force. Just the other day, we were at Barolco for their ribbon cutting of the new Western Tech, and we were going through, and one of them giving us the tour, said that our non-normal students are down because they're working, so there's fewer coming in that want to get the technology they need for the next job. So what we have to figure out how to get the money and get it so they can get through and to get through in 4 years too. There's so many. I mean, my daughters, they decided they want done in 4 years. They all played softball in college, but after 2 years they said, I'm not going to get out of here in 4 years, so I'm quitting softball so I can make sure I get done in four. And that cuts down a lot too on your on the expense. And I have to say they did a good job, because I haven't spent a lot of money on them. They're taking care of it.
Well, Lee, I didn't say that you got a pass on the budget, but I think you must have heard that before. So it came from somewhere else.
There's been so many things out there this year that I don't know.
Right. I was just looking at the amount of funding that was taxes that came to the UW in 1974. So I know that was a long time ago, but it was at 44%. That shows true dedication to an education that is an investment in not only in our children, but also in the future of the state. And I personally think that the administration made their mark when they tried to remove the Wisconsin idea from the UW system, accidentally, oops, and then had to put it back. But I think that's what they were really going for. They were honestly trying to, again, from what I can see, starve it out and privatize it. This is a pattern that I've seen over and over. They pretend, they call it a tuition freeze, then they cut the funding that comes from the state, and then they say, oops, it's not working, we better bring in a private company and privatize it. And what I see happening at the university is more and more private companies controlling what's going on at the university, and less that's dedicated to true education for really for a civil society, the basis of the Wisconsin idea, where you have, honestly, a very inexpensive education that's open again and gives equal opportunity to all young adults without coming out with this incredible debt that most of them are facing today.
Quick response. I graduated from University of Madison before 1974, so that's a long time ago. And yet you look at the cost of the university at that time compared to what the cost is now. I maybe shouldn't bring up tobacco because now that's a nasty word around, but I raised tobacco. You could raise, guys come home from college, raised an acre of tobacco over the summer, and that paid their college for the year. So you can see the difference in what the university cost then compared to now. And when you're talking about, I know it was brought up too about K-12, two-thirds funding, I don't think we ever hit two-thirds funding from the state. Even when Tommy started it, I don't think we ever hit two-thirds funding. I know it's going down and it shouldn't be going down, but I thought they made the mistake when they put it on everything, including buildings. I thought it should have been two-thirds in the classroom instead of on the buildings.
Okay. Next question comes from Hope Kierwein.
The population of Wisconsin is getting older and more people are expected to reach retirement age in coming years. How can we best prepare for and serve an aging population?
Wow, heavens, that is a really difficult question. To be honest, from what I understand is the cost of a person who has to live in a assisted living facility, an older person, it astounds me, honestly. And it's a little bit difficult for me to sort out why is it costing so much money. And my suspicion is that there's a lot of profiting at some part of that, because normally when you look at something and the cost of it is exorbitant, there's somebody that's profiting and has a captured customer. This is, and they do have a captured customer, because when you have an elderly parent or even someone who's not so elderly but is having a hard time getting around and living on their own, you're stuck. You're at their mercy. And so, honestly, I think that the state needs to do a much better job of looking at some alternative types of facilities for these folks, and perhaps using some combined where you're combining some younger folks with some older folks together, and that's helping them be able to have the really the community around them to help care for them, instead of the kind of facilities that we're seeing right now where I know that they're trying, and I actually know a lot of the folks that work in those facilities and are trying very hard. It's not an easy answer, but I think we need to take it apart and look at it much more closely, quickly.
Well, I'm getting closer and closer to that. I think that's why they put me on long-term care and aging and long-term care committee, because of the color of the hair. I'm not quite sure, but it is a big issue that we're going to have, because you're going to be looking at assisted living. There are some that need nursing homes. When I was on county board, I was a trustee for Vernon Manor. We weren't making any money. We were losing many dollars a day per bed, because the reimbursement was low then for the care that you got from the ones that were on Medicare and Medicaid. And that's where we have to look now. And then to get the ones that wanted to work as a CNA or as a nurse in those facilities. We need to get better reimbursement, because they're not getting paid. They go for someplace else. My middle daughter went back to school to be a CNA, and she was going to go back into nursing, or go into the nursing program. But she started at Organic Valley, her first job out in the HR department. Well, all of a sudden they came up and offered her a job back again with a whole lot more money and a lot less hours. So we have to be looking at that, because you need the right people to take care of them. It takes a special person to work in these places and do it. And trying to keep them at home is going to be another thing that's going to be, that makes you live longer. It helps being in your own house. But then you need people to come in and do it. And to get the people to come in and do it, that's hard to get them too, because they're looking for that job where they make another, they can go to Quick Trip and make more money.
Next question comes from Catherine Kolkmeyer, goes to Lee Nerissen.
One of the issues that the league is interested in is the idea of redistricting, and wondered if you would support the establishment of an independent commission or an agency that would be responsible for developing a nonpartisan legislative redistricting plan. Why or why not?
Actually, in the last two redistricts, I think before this one, it was done by the court, because the legislature couldn't come up with it, so the court did it. You're probably talking about Iowa, because they have a law like that. And I think we'd have to take a good close look at that law and see how it would move over here into Wisconsin. In the last redistricting, I actually lost one township in Vernon County. I don't know how it happened, but I did. So, the redistricting is a big issue. I think neither party really, at leadership, not some of us out here, but in leadership, they don't want to change it, because if you do have full control in the Senate and in the Assembly, it doesn't matter what party, you get to pass it through. The only way it might be different is if you have a governor that's a different party than the two that are doing it. So I don't think leadership in either party has the heart to do it right now.
Yeah, I like the idea of having a third party come in and make it as fair and just as possible. I was just reading about the redistricting problems in the last election and noticed that even though 54% of the votes were cast by Democrats and 44% were cast by Republicans, Walker got in. And that just shows me that we're not, the way that the district lines are drawn is not reflecting the actual will of the constituency. And that tells me that, I know it's being challenged in federal court right now as well, because it is, on its face, appears so incredibly unfair. So yeah, I would like to, as soon as possible actually, look at that and have a, why would anyone disagree with having a third party come in and draw the lines as fairly as possible? It seems like that's the basis of democracy, right? That we all have an equal platform to stand on. And it kind of goes in line with campaign finance reform and getting the dark money out. And not having dark money super PACs come in and put ads against our competitors or the folks that we're running against, you know, and knowing where all that money comes from. And actually, both in terms of redistricting and in terms of campaign finance, Wisconsin is going in the exact wrong direction.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Martha Kolaski, WKBT, and goes to Alicia.
Ms. Lineberg, the Toma VA has seen a lot of turmoil. And even again today, there are some 50 veterans who are very worried about where they're going to be living, because they've been given some short notice that they will have to vacate sometime in January.
Yeah.
So they're very worried about where they're going to be living. How do we encourage the next generation to go into the service if there is this black cloud in Wisconsin that we're not taking care of our veterans?
Oh, right. Well, not just in Wisconsin, across the country. I honestly don't know how anyone can vote against giving full care, full whole life care to a veteran that goes and fights for our country and experiences the kind of trauma that they very often experience. And there's a couple of just basic problems is that, again, you have profit mixed in with this. And this is, there are a few places in our society where we don't need to have profit and competition mixed in. And that is when we're caring for people and when we're educating children. Whether it's healthcare, whether it's veteran care, whether it's elder care. And I guess the other place is protection of common public resources, water and air and land. All of those places, there's no room for profit and there's no room for competition. And so you see that with the VA where, you know, they're eroding the support. And you saw what happened in the, I can't remember, the King's one on the other side of the state, where they just eroded the amount of funding for it to the point where the veterans that were in there were suffering immensely. I mean, so I guess how do you solve that? You need to show that our veterans are being honored and cared for every single step of the way, and not just by a parade on a certain day, but every single step of the way, where we help them reintegrate into society, we help them with psychological problems, physical problems, we give them a place to live if they need, and we give them a full community of caring support.
And when we had the first hearing, it was myself and Representative Vandermeer and Chairman of the Veterans Committee in the Assembly, Representative Skronsky. We actually had the first hearing in Toma over the issue about the drugs and everything and the people waiting. But it is an issue around the whole country. And it's not just a Wisconsin issue, it's a national issue. Because look at what's going on now over in California, I believe it is, where they're saying they have to pay back $15,000, $30,000 each one that had a bonus when they signed up for reserves. And now 2 years later, you're gonna make them pay it back. And that's federal that's doing that. That's not a state doing it. So it is an issue all across the country. In Toma, my wife has a cousin that lives up there. He's gonna be worrying. I don't want him to come back out because when he was home, he was a tunnel rat in Vietnam for two tours. If you know what a tunnel rat does, he's pretty small. They shoot flamethrowers in, and then you're the first guy in, and you shoot anything that moves. And he did that for two tours out there, and he's got issues. And when he was living by himself, he had a little house, so he was living by himself, but he was self-medicating. He became an alcoholic. He drank anything he could get a hold of. And now living in Toma and living up there, he's getting really good care. Now he wants out every day because he still has that urge for the alcohol. But at least he's getting good care and he's clean and he's got a great place to live and he's getting good food. So a lot of the people in Toma are really great at what they do. There's a few of them that have, you know, like they say, a bad apple in a bag, in a bushel, it spoils the whole works.
Next question comes from Dustin Lutke.
Heroin and meth continue to plague both rural and urban areas in western Wisconsin. What ways can you as a state legislator work to give local agencies, law enforcement, advocacy groups the tools to deal with these issues?
The last two sessions, I think it's 17 bills that we've passed, and that's bipartisan. That's been unanimous through the Assembly, Democrat and Republican both, on different bills for the problems we have with heroin. Down in Vernon and Crawford County is mainly meth. And now when they do the cooking, you can do the driving in your car and you take a bottle and you can cook it there. And it's hard to find them because they're, you know, you get down in there and you can drive all day and not meet a car on some of these side roads. And that's an issue that we have to deal with. One of the bills that I, out of the HOPE agenda that we called it, I was a second on that one, and that was for the EpiPen. Get it more out there, get it out to the people because they need the EpiPen. Once that person overdoses, you don't have any more hope. As long as they're alive, there's hope that they can kick this thing, and it's a hard thing to kick. And then another bill that we passed was the Good Samaritan bill. You know, normally you're not doing it alone. Somebody is there with you. And they take off. As soon as they see somebody overdosing, they take off because they're afraid they're gonna get busted. So now we passed the law, so get them help. You know, giving them help. As, like I said, as long as they're alive, there's hope. And then we have to figure out how to stop the transportation from Mexico, Chicago, Minneapolis. It's going to interstate. The cops are on the interstate. Now they're using Highway 14 as the main corridor. And we had a drug forum just the other night in Coon Valley with the Coon Valley Alliance, which I'm a member of. And we were talking with a lot of the drug, the regional drug people there. And telling us what helps and what doesn't.
Why does somebody end up in that situation in the first place? And that's a question. I hear a lot of after the fact, how we're going to stop them, how we're going to have these bills to encourage people to turn them in. We're going to have an EpiPen to save their life. But nobody wants to be a drug addict. They become in that, they have no hope. That's why they're there in the first place. Do you know that if you make minimum wage and you work 40 hours a week, you make $15,000 a year? You make $1,200 a month. How many people can raise a family on that these days? Let's say you're going to high school and you finish high school and you're going to work at the Quick Trip, or Quick Trip pays more. But let's say you want to be an early childhood teacher, right? And you're making $7.25 an hour. And you're trying to take care of your kids after working all day long. That's what is happening here, folks, is that we are taking far too much of, we're actually letting the private companies suck the life out of our rural communities in so many ways. And that is removing the reason for living. I heard a story the other day in DeSoto that I'm going to repeat it here so you can all share this with me. 21-year-old kid from DeSoto went and put his truck in the river trying to commit suicide. Didn't work. Walked up the hill to Genoa to his mom's grave and shot himself. 21 years old.
Leave it like a 30-second response, and then we're going to go to closing statements.
It isn't just the young and the ones without the money, because at this forum we had the other day, the father came up that lost his son about a year ago, and he said, my son had $250,000 that he put in his body. He had a very good chiropractic office job, and he was making good money, and he sold it. And he started with pain pills, and then it just went. It was cheaper to buy the heroin. So it isn't just, you know, he had the money. He was doing it, and he thought he could handle it, and he couldn't. He had help twice, and it just didn't make it. So it isn't. It's over the whole spectrum.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Lisa Einberger, the closing statement.
Well, thank you all for being here tonight. I hope this was informative. I'm sure it was informative, actually. And I'm really happy to share with you my ideas how I'd like to represent the 96th District. The reason why I'm running, the whole reason I'm standing up here tonight, is for two reasons. One is because of my family and my children. I, coming from public school education teachers, and knowing that service is really the greatest thing that I can offer, I would love to serve our constituency in the 96th District. And secondly, I can't leave the world like this for my children. I have to step up and try to call out the darkness that I see. Honestly, I see far too much deception within the current administration, and I'm afraid that Mr. Narasimhan goes along with it most of the time. And I don't think that if people really understood, and if Mr. Narasimhan would come out in the district and talk with people more often, we would have the kind of government that we have. Personally, I'd be a very engaged assembly person. I have an office right on Main Street. I'm a business person, and I'm a mother, and I would be there every single day for the constituents.
Thank you. Lee Larson.
It's been an honor to serve as your state representative. I'm humbled to have been given many awards for the work by groups representing farmers, veterans, public health groups, home builders, and so on. This is a vote of confidence in me for the work I've done for you. I think of all we've accomplished by working together, from passing laws to grow Wisconsin agriculture, to tackling this area's heroin epidemic and health care needs, to making sure our kids get the best shot in life, to investing in training our workforce. As you've heard tonight throughout this campaign, there's quite a difference between me and my opponent on the issues. It's come down to this. I have a proven track record of results and being good steward of your hard-earned money while making sure we fund essential government functions. My opponent will take us back to the days of growing government as big as some think it needs to be. We've worked hard to turn things around, and I want to keep moving Wisconsin forward. You have an important decision to make on November 8th. As your state representative, I'll continue to stand for spending for your tax dollars responsibly, like it's my own money, making sure our kids have good schools, protecting our seniors and vulnerable citizens. I ask for your vote so we can keep working together and make sure our area remains a great place to work, live, raise a family, and retire.
Okay, thank you, Lee. I'd like to thank Lee Nielsen and Liz Leinberger for being here, for agreeing to the debate, and I think they certainly deserve a round of applause. Thank you all for being here, and I just want to remind you, we have one more debate a week from today, 8 to 9 o'clock in the Clery Center. It's a 32nd state Senate race. Thank you very much.